Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 24th of September. We talk about Afghanistan today. There has been talk that the administration is looking at something different than a major troop escalation, the deteriorating conditions on the ground, the messy and unsettled outcome of the Afghan elections, and a report by the new commander, General Stanley McChrystal, have all been not very good news for the administration. And the president, according to news reports, is examining whether the strategy that he unveiled in March is still the best approach and whether it could work with the extra combat forces that McChrystal wants. We're going to be looking at the major troop increase, if it's necessary, if there are alternatives to that. And we're very happy to have as our guest. He's joined us several times before. He's really marvelous. And he's joining us by phone today from Kabul, Afghanistan. Dean Thomas Goodyear is with us. He is Dean of International Studies and Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska. He has a long involvement in this region. He was selected by the U.S. Department of State to serve as Senior Political Affairs Officer on the UN peacekeeping mission to Afghanistan in 96-97. He has participated in Fulbright programs in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Norway, France, India, Nepal, and Germany. And he speaks and reads and writes Afghan Persian, Iranian Persian, and Tajikistani Persian. He studied Arabic, French, German, Latin, Russian, and Spanish. And he's been working very steadily in education work in Afghanistan. He is there right now to work on rebuilding schools. He's been meeting with educators, and we're very happy to have him with us. I always like to say this about him as well, that he worked in his father's pastry shop when he was 8 till the age of 24. And he has a master baking certificate, which he received at the age of 18. So he's had a full life in many different areas. Professor Tom Goodyear, thank you so much for being with us once again.
It's good to be again with you, Kathleen. And I always appreciate the fact that you mentioned my work in my father's bakery.
Are you still baking, sir?
Well, you know, I love to cook, and so I wouldn't say I so much bake as I enjoy cooking. I particularly like to cook without recipes, and you know, the thing is, I also enjoy eating, so that's kind of a good thing, I think.
That is a good thing. So, tell me about what work you're doing now. What brings you to Afghanistan at this time? Are you working on building schools?
Well, what we're doing right now is we've been doing in-service teacher training for Afghan teachers since 2002. And up to this point, we've trained over 8,600 Afghan teachers, teachers who are in varieties of schools around the country. And over 80% of that 8,600 are female. So I think we're making a major contribution in helping to, usher the Afghan women back into the employment sector. When I lived here in the 60s and 70s, the teaching cadre of Afghanistan was more than 60% female, and the government employees and the offices, et cetera, the government was around 50% female. And I think it's always important to try and in a country like Afghanistan going through various stages of development to be able to re-employ Afghan females in whatever sector they've been having their training. So we do in-service teacher training workshops, and then we're also working with the Afghan Army. We're providing literacy training for the Afghan military, the soldiers. There are over 86,000 of them, and only about 15% have literacy. So that's a major challenge. And in all of these projects, we employ Afghan local hired nationals, not expatriate teams.
We have been hearing, as you know, reports over the years, the last few years, that it is quite dangerous for girls to be going to school, and I would assume that it would be dangerous for women to be teaching. Has that kind of violence against women subsided, do you think, Tom, or not?
Well, in some ways, no, and in some ways, yes. I think that there seems to be, you know, more and more an understanding of on the part of females, mothers and daughters, that if they're going to go to school, they're going to have to, you know, run the risk of being threatened. But there seems to be an uncommon number of girls who just, you know, are marching ahead with their determination to go to school. And I think in areas where there is fewer security issues, the numbers obviously are higher than those in the areas in the southeast and south of Afghanistan, where the security insurgencies are more you know, prevalent. And I think probably, though, Kathleen, at this stage, and the reason why I say yes and no on this is that there are probably more females in school in Afghanistan at this, you know, point in Afghan history than at any other time. And I think that's a testimony, really, to the commitment of Afghan families that they're going to have all of their children go to school, boys and girls, and particularly, you know, a testimony to the courage of Afghan women who are teaching girls and the girls themselves who are going.
Mm-hmm. And what about the construction of schools? Are there funds? We talk about building the infrastructure of the country. Are there new schools being built? And if so, who's responsible for funding all of that, Tom?
Well, many of the international organizations, both governmental and non-governmental, have been actively participating in the reconstruction of schools, building new schools, putting up temporary schools, and building schools that will replace the temporary places. I think one thing that I've noticed since the beginning of 2002, if there's one common governmental policy on which everybody seems to agree, the Afghans and those supporting them, it's that they want their kids to have places to go to school that are both secure from the weather and to the best degree possible, also secure from, you know, attacks. And so the numbers of schools and the repairing and the rebuilding of schools, really, I think it goes on rather amazing. I just met most of today with the governor of Lakhman Province, which is in the eastern part of Afghanistan, right near two of the really problematic areas in Afghanistan. And he reports to me and those of us in our meeting of how many schools that have been built in the last 5 years, that there are 77 schools in his four districts, and they've all been repaired or put into fairly good situation in terms of their facilities, etc. They're not the most modern schools as we might know them in the United States, but they're really quite nice. They're new, they're clean, and so this is one of the areas in which there seems to be universal agreement that this needs to be a priority in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. The other areas where there is less than universal agreement is whether or not we should add more troops, whether or not we need to withdraw troops. What do you think should our role be at this point in Afghanistan?
You know, that's a very complex question, and any answer would be just as complex. But one of the things that I am amazed with, Kathleen, and it seems to be this way every time I come back, but even more so this time, is the industriousness of the Afghan people. One drives around Kabul or goes to various population centers in the nearby provinces and notices how much the Afghans have invested themselves in the reconstruction of their homes or their businesses and the building of you know, apartment buildings by people making investments and the whole economy of the country. Everybody talks about the opium poppy economy of Afghanistan, and that's certainly a major problem and one I'm sure we'll talk about later in the program. But one also has to note that there's many other things going on. Most people that I know and that one sees in Kabul, which is now swelled over 5 million people, are really actively engaging and trying to make a life for themselves. That's the most impressive part of it. And when you see that, you have to kind of use that as a foundation in terms of determining what you're talking about relating to troop, you know, increases or decreases, whatever. In other words, the Afghans themselves seem to be committed to the future. They seem to be trusting in the presence of the international community to help them in a long time. And but there's no question that the need for improved security is at the top of all priorities, even more so than anything like I was talking about relating to education. If you can't have the security for your family, then you're not going to have confidence in participating with the government of Afghanistan and its partners in the future because you're fearful of reprisals. So if we don't, I think, put focus on the military requirements right now, then there will not be security for the Afghans. So that would put me on in the group with General McChrystal. I think that there are many things going on in Afghanistan that reflect the trust in the Afghan people and their future, and I think we need to help provide that security, because if then they feel secure and are starting to do the things that are necessary for Afghanistan's long-term development, the prospects of any success of the many insurgencies that are active in Afghanistan from across the border and from within Afghanistan are going to diminish.
Mm-hmm. You're speaking to us from Afghanistan. This phrase, deteriorating conditions on the ground, is circulating in the press in the United States and is very much a part of the political conversation right now. Do you see that there are deteriorating conditions on the ground? And if so, could you explain how you think the military may want to change strategies to root out in a more effective manner the insurgents?
Well, I have to rely on the analysis of the military, experts and personnel, because I don't have the really the option to get into the places where the most of the fighting is going on. But I think that there's no question about the fact that most people who are analyzing and have access to that kind of analysis believe that the insurgencies are more active today than they have been at any time since we came into Afghanistan at the end of 2001. Part of that is a recognition by the insurgencies that they are being challenged more than at any other time as well. I mean, when you have people being wounded, killed, attacks, etc., it's because you're also going out and engaging the enemy. And I think that that's in some way a measure of how we're becoming more aggressive. One of the things I think, Kathleen, that's very important for us to remember is that people talk about this as like it's an 8-year-long war. And in true, we have been involved in Afghanistan, but we had a very, very inconsistent kind of effort that was possessed with fits and starts. So it was almost like we had 8, separate wars in 8 years because of the inconsistency and the lack of coordination by our government. People like to compare this to the Vietnam War in terms of years, or the Iraq War, whatever the case may be. And the thing we need to remember is that we came into Afghanistan in 2001, drove the forces, the Taliban, the Al-Qaeda, and Pakistani forces out of the country. But we didn't really put any focus on securing Afghanistan. We went instead into Iraq. And so that was the second time in 20 years, 1989 being the first, after the Soviets left, that we got engaged in working with the Afghans And then we kind of dumped them and focused elsewhere. And now I think we had we have an administration that recognizes that the real war against the globalization of terrorism is here in Afghanistan, not in Iraq. And so in some ways, though we've been fighting for 8 years, we had not really had a concerted program. And the other thing, and I hate to just keep going on, but I think this is more like the Cold War. People, you know, have to remember that we were fighting that Cold War for a long time, and we're not fighting the United States against Great Britain the way we did to gain our independence. We are fighting against a kind of movement, a terrorist movement, and it's hard to put your finger on all of the component parts, but I think there's no question about the fact that the those who attacked us in 2001 had their training in Afghanistan, even though no Afghans were involved in any of that. And if we're going to secure our own interest in this region and also around the world and at home, we need to go after those who attacked us. And I don't think we're doing that until we now have begun that under the current administration.
Mm-hmm. So you would believe then, Tom, that a stable Afghanistan is central to the security of the United States?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. And if anybody has any question about that, then they should just look at the map, see where Afghanistan is located. Note to its east is Pakistan and India, both of which have nuclear weapons. To its west is Iran, with whom we have had, of course, a very, unpleasant recent history and continue to have issues with. And then, of course, farther to the west of that is Iraq. I mean, it's a volatile area, Kathleen, and if we could in any way be successful in stabilizing one component part of this area, it would be a tremendous, I think, asset in our own efforts to deal with the stable world. The future of America's economy and also Americans' ability to travel around the world, whether to study or even to vacation, is going to be threatened or hijacked in some way or another by terrorist activities. And I don't think we as a people want to live in a world in which we feel we are in some ways restricted to a small part of that world where we will feel secure. And even in that small part, we noted in 2001 that we weren't as secure as we thought.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Thomas Goodyear. He is Dean of International Studies, Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska. But his work has taken him many times to Afghanistan, and that's where he is at the moment. He is in Kabul, and he is working with educators in the country to establish schools and to train teachers and also to help with increase the literacy rates of the Afghan military. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We have a couple lines open right now for Professor Goodyear. And our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Franz DeWall. He's joined us several times. He is the author of a new book now, The Age of Empathy, Nature's Lessons for a Kinder Society. So that's coming up the second hour of our program. As the administration wrestles with whether or not there are alternatives to a major troop increase and the issue of Afghanistan in addition to health care is being debated in this country, I wonder what your thoughts are about this. Do you see progress at all on the ground? Would you agree with Professor Goodyear that we need to be there in some capacity and that the security of Afghanistan is vital to the security of the United States. Would you be in favor of a troop increase? What are your thoughts on Afghanistan? Our number 800-486-8655. And we start our calls with Milton from Madison. Hi, Milton.
Hi. You're by half too modest about your guest. Mr. Gutierrez is really known as being one of the real go-to guys during a number of presidential administrations, on the subject of Afghanistan. And anybody who wants to read about his work on the net really should. We're very lucky to have him as a guest this morning, Kathleen. Thank you. Certainly there is extreme security concern about who will control Afghanistan and who will set the future for there. But on the other hand, if we're doing a Ben Franklin analysis of pluses on one side and minuses on the other, we do need to look at money, especially when this country is not doing all that well financially. As a longtime insider, in that country with such a long history, do you really think that there is that much in the way of natural resources or pipeline services or things that Afghanistan can give back to the international world that can help justify our presence there?
Well, first of all, thank you for your gracious comments. And, that's kind of an interesting question and one that has really engaged a couple of the members of our Center for Afghanistan Studies, particularly Jack Schroeder, who is a geologist and geographer at the Center for Afghanistan Studies. And he always likes to say that Afghanistan is a Texas-sized country with Oklahoma-sized resources, which it means it may not have quite the resources of Texas, but it's not bad to have the resources of Oklahoma. Afghanistan does have some petrochemicals, and a lot of people believe that who are geologists, etc., that it has far more than has yet been uncovered. And in the northern part of Afghanistan, the thing that I always found interesting when I lived here, and I lived here for a total of 10 years, from 64 to 74, and then that period that Kathleen mentioned at the beginning when I was with the UN peacekeeping force, is that Afghanistan, when I lived here in the 60s and 70s, was a net exporter of certain kinds of foods, like pomegranates and pistachios, walnuts, almonds, raisins, grapes, and was moving towards self-sufficiency in wheat, etc., and had a rather bright future in terms of people making prospecting for iron ore. They have massive iron ore deposits in the central part of Afghanistan, but without any real highways to go at them. So it would require, of course, building highways to get at where the resources are. And iron isn't that hot on the market right now, but there are copper resources in the eastern part that the Chinese are seeking to pursue. I think also we need to remember that in the beginning of the war in Iraq, that people were saying that was going to pay for itself. Probably wars like these don't really wind up paying for themselves, but what they can offer more is maybe the prospects that the country itself may be able to take care of itself more effectively than a lot of people think that it might be. One of the ironies of what we read about today in Afghanistan is that when I lived here, I never saw a field, not one, under cultivation with opium poppies. Hmm. How does this happen now that it's the number one producer of those things? Well, Afghanistan became a stateless society, and that's the perfect kind of environment for the training of terrorists, for the development of drug and warlords, and something like opium poppies. And so if we really want to be able to help our own economy manage the situation in Afghanistan, where we don't have to spend all of our time trying to worry about these drugs and stuff like that, it's to help the Afghans rebuild their nation state, at least to a point where they can go after people who are violating even their own laws. And I think, you know, that's the intent of rebuilding the Afghan National Army, which is probably, at best, even right now, less than half of what is really required. Also, the Afghan National Police. And the other thing to remember about that is that when you train people in your army and your police, you're doing more to homogenize the people of Afghanistan, bringing them together from different parts of the country to help them, again, understand the diversity in their own country. Afghans were doing that prior to the Soviet invasion. Then the Soviet invasion forced them all to contract. And now the real biggest challenge for the government in Afghanistan and for us is to help the Afghans come back together and work for, you know, their nation.
Thank you, Milton, so much for your call. Let's go to Fred next from Watersmeet. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Just a couple comments to see your guest's reaction. First of all, the thing that seems to be forgotten about is the whole war initially, I thought, was predicated on the capture or killing of bin Laden and his second in command. That is just totally out of the press. Don't hear anything about it at all. And, you know, until we actually have the moxie to go into northeast Pakistan, where I guess he's hiding, I don't see this being solved. The second point I wanted to mention was, initially, the Afghanistan war by our allies was looked at as a just war. And we had the support of our allies, unlike in Iraq. Is it too late for the current administration, as part of their plans, to try and re-enlist the support of our allies rather than going it alone like we have been in Iraq? I'll listen now.
Thanks, Fred.
Those are two very, very great questions, I think. And, you know, I have been wondering myself, and it's really very frustrating when Afghans ask you, you know, gee, you know, they say, Mr. Tom, you know, why haven't we together caught Osama bin Laden, Zawahiri, Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, Mullah Muhammad Omar? In other words, I think everybody remembers that in Iraq we had this deck of cards, and we went after, you know, the Jack of Hearts, or, you know, Ace of Spades, or whatever it was, getting Saddam and Chemical Ali and Qudsi and Hussein and the sons and all this stuff. And but we haven't seemed to have gotten many of those in an Afghan deck of cards. And I think it's something but I think we ought to even do more for that, because it's kind of not good symbolically that we're still 8 years into this thing and we don't even know where are these folks. And for us, you know, if we would get Osama or learn that he was killed or something of this nature, it would have a tremendous symbolic impact on the confidence of the Afghans themselves. Because you got to remember, if you feel that you're being threatened every night you go to bed by the, you know, night letters that say we don't want you to be collaborating with your government or foreign governments, people are reticent. And so anything we can do to help them to feel and trust in the fact that we're going to be with them, I think is a good thing. And I also like this statement about just war. I mean, there are numbers of reasons why we can say that. First of all, we were attacked by people who hijacked Afghanistan and used it to train individuals to come after us. I think, you know, there's a need for retribution. Those people are still at large. We don't even know where they are. And I think it is a just war to go after people who have attacked you and who continue to say they are at war with you and are targeting you. The other reason that I think there's a kind of just element to this is that the United States helped the Afghans, fought with the Afghans, in the last big battle of the Cold War. The Cold War, the United States won. You got to remember that in 1989, when the Soviets left Afghanistan, less than a year, during that same year, 1989, the Berlin Wall came down, and within two more years, the Soviet Union was history. And so the last big battle in the Cold War was in Afghanistan. That was the final straw upon the Soviet camel's back. And what did we do after that? We kind of dumped the Afghans. We didn't provide to them the Marshall Plan that we provided to those who had been fighting against us in Europe after the Second World War. It seems to me like there's a misappropriation of approaches here. And I think, the Afghans lost over a million in that war. And I think, we did not try and help those moderate forces of Afghanistan after the war with the Soviets. As a result, the extremist elements in the region were able to gain control of that country. And it came back and bit us in the butt, and we need to be mindful of that. It is a war that is in our interests.
Why is it so darn hard to find bin Laden and his buddies, Tom? Why is this so difficult?
Well, there are numbers of reasons. First of all, the train, Kathleen, out here is really, really, really challenging. It's not only mountainous, it's mountainous with very, very craggy, physical makeup, and there's a lot of forests in the mountains. The areas in which it's reputed that these people might be the westernmost part of Pakistan, up against Afghanistan. Has long been an area where any kind of military effort has had such great difficulty because it's hard to be able to pursue people there. And when you see the shots on TV of our soldiers fighting in the Kunar region up in the northeastern part of Afghanistan, it's a very challenging thing. The mountains in Afghanistan kind of start where ours leave off in terms of elevation. And the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan is the same as the distance between Boston and Omaha, 1,500-plus miles.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 259 mountain passes between these two countries along that border, which have long been major transit areas for the famous silk and spice roads of the past and for people who have been smugglers as well. And so it's difficult terrain. It's made up of people who have long been very independent and resistant to not only invaders, but from any type of dominance of their own. The Pakistani government does not have real control over the federally tribal administrative agencies, which are all along the eastern Afghan border and where the insurgents who need refuge and try and get weapons can go and repair after they've done attacking in Afghanistan for those who come back and forth across the border. So part of it also is that we have not done a good job in identifying who are the insurgents. We keep talking about Taliban, but there are all kinds of different kinds of insurgents, and it was mentioned earlier that the Afghans really do want us there. There's no question, like the ambiguity in Iraq. Afghans really do like Americans, and they always have. They really do believe that they have no future without our intervention, and it's true that some of the Afghans are engaged in the insurgencies, but 95% of the population wish all that would go away because they really want to get back in to pursuing life with their families like anybody else, hoping to be able to have education for their children and, some type of pride in the way they're able to grow old and have a lifestyle that has, something that isn't always fearing, somebody coming around the corner.
Right. Thomas Goodyear is our guest this hour. He is Dean of International Studies and Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska. He has lived in Afghanistan for 10 years. He was a Peace Corps. It's amazing how many people who have Peace Corps backgrounds become devoted to understanding the country in which they served. He was Also a Fulbright Fellow, he was selected by the U.S. Department of State to serve as Senior Political Affairs Officer on the U.N. peacekeeping mission in 96 and 97. He's done a phenomenal amount of work obtaining grants and huge grants to help deliver education to Afghan children. He is in Kabul right now and in the country working with educators, training more teachers, and they're also working on teaching those in the Afghan military how to read. Here's our number. Lines are filled, but we'll have some openings eventually. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest the second hour of our program this Thursday is Franz De Waal. He is the author of The Age of Empathy, Nature's Lessons for a Kinder Society. Back to phone calls for Professor Goodyear, and let's go to Larry is next from Madison. Hi, Larry.
Thank you. The crucial objective in Afghanistan should be to eliminate al-Qaeda, not to eliminate the Taliban. There is some overlapping of the two, but the highest amount of overlapping I've seen reported is about 30%. We have to remember it was not the Taliban that attacked on 9/11. The odds of being able to eliminate al-Qaeda from Afghanistan and around the world by military means seem very slim. Professor Walt of Harvard was saying about a month ago that, and pointing out that al-Qaeda can operate anywhere. I recall that part of the planning for 9/11 by al-Qaeda actually took place in Germany. What it seems to be the case to me is that good law enforcement techniques offer the best odds of hunting down and eliminating al-Qaeda around the world. Of course, this would require cooperation of law enforcement in many nations, but an enlightened United States foreign policy should be able to effect that kind of cooperation. Finally, one small point. The guest is referring to the opposition in Afghanistan as insurgents. And I think that's a loaded term. An insurgency implies some kind of uprising against a legitimate government, but the government in Kabul is anything but legitimate. We've just seen recent evidence of its corruption and the attempt to rig the election there. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, I couldn't agree more that, you know, that the primary target, I think, relating to all of this, should be al-Qaeda, because they are the ones, just as Larry pointed out, who attacked us. It was not the Afghans. And I think I implied that in one of my earlier points that I made in reference to another question. And the progress so far has been, I think, very, very disappointing. And we have not done, we did not really, I think, do a good job after 9/11 in engaging other countries, just as Larry was suggesting we need to do in order to be able to do this. One of the countries, of course, we really have to have involved in this far more than has been is Pakistan, because if it's in Pakistan, indeed, where the leadership of al-Qaeda is thought to be, then we need to have Pakistani, cooperation. I think in the past we have had a rather unfortunate history of inconsistency in dealing with Pakistan. And so what we have to do is persuade the Pakistanis that we are a reliable partner. And we've had such a hill and valley history, and it's too long to try and recount here. But at one time, Pakistan was one of our major allies in the Central Alliance. Nobody almost even remembers that anymore. It was nicknamed the Baghdad Pact. That made up of Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Turkey, the United States, and Great Britain. But we we were always inconsistent. We were kind of flirting with India and Pakistan back and forth, and we need to persuade the Pakistanis that they need to be concerned about this. I think they're coming to understand that, and that we're going to be with them as we go after a joint enemy. There are more people in Pakistan who have been killed by far and away by these al-Qaeda terrorists than there have been in the United States, and we're not going to be able to get them unless we're working closely with them and other nations in the region. So I use the term insurgents, and I appreciate the point that Larry's trying to make, because it suggests some kind of a even legitimate force against another force, the government of Afghanistan. I do that because to call them, people always refer to them as just the Taliban, and it's what's going on in Afghanistan is more than just a one kind of individual, Mullah Muhammad Omar, fighting against the Karzai government or something like that. There are issues that various groups, warlords from the past in Afghanistan, in the south and southeast of Afghanistan, feel have never been redressed, since the 9/11 events, and where they feel they're not major participants in their own governance. And so some of the groups aren't really affiliated with al-Qaeda or with Mullah Muhammad Omar, but have their own regional, personal, ethnic, historical issues. And they, we need to understand what each group brings to the fight here, and then be able to address the different objections and objectives of those who are in the fight. And I do take a little bit of issue with the fact about the legitimacy of the Karzai government. It's in the position right now where it is because in the first election that was held, there wasn't any real question at all about the elections. And while there have been certainly allegations, and I think proofs that there have been fraud in these elections, there's an awful lot that's happened in the very short history of the democratic process that began after 9/11 in Afghanistan, and a lot has been accomplished. One must remember that the march towards any type of democratic governance is a very, very difficult one. We had 80 years where we were fighting with each other violently, not only the Civil War, but the Kansas-Nebraska War, the war of rebellion in the western Pennsylvania, et cetera, in our own history. And so democracy is difficult to put together. I was going to say cobble together because
that's where you are.
It's a pun I can't refuse to use. But I think there needs to be something done to redress these claims of fraud. But no matter what was going to happen in this election, given the grassroots of the candidates, Karzai was going to win, and is still going to win somehow or other. And I think people need to come together and understand that, because we need to work with this government, even however problematic may have been the passing of this election, because if we keep kicking it around, we're not going to be able to really have an effective, credible partner in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to, I'm not sure we answered, this goes back a couple questions before, Tom. When you look at, how large a problem this is, I'm wondering, what is the NATO presence now in Afghanistan? Do we have friends who are helping in this endeavor?
Well, there's no question that it's at a greater, number of people and resources than it's ever been. And I'll tell you, I think one can see, at least I feel I do see this, I think one of the smartest things that President Obama did was to retain Bob Gates as our Secretary of Defense and Admiral Mullen as the Chief of Staff. I think both of these guys, having been in the last year or two of the Bush administration, saw exactly how we should not have been doing it. And learned a lot from that, and our I think understanding that our approach, our strategy was all wrong, and now is focusing the strategy more on providing security for the Afghan people than we had in the past, and learning more how to deal with them in this, not using, remote weaponry, because I believe there is no such thing as a smart bomb. There's too much collateral damage in any bomb. And, you have to have good intelligence on the ground. I think we're really getting into good strategy now, and I appreciate that. And I don't want this to seem like a partisan attack on, the previous administration, because if we took a look at history, we've got to recognize that during the Clinton administration, there was nothing being done whatsoever in addressing the rise of these terrorist organizations in this region, even though there was much information about their growth. Mm-hmm. And it was a tragedy that people like who knew about it, people like Madeleine Albright, et cetera, were not persuasive enough within their within her administration and Bill Clinton to get the Clinton inner circle to go after them. And so they were able to grow, and we wound up with 9/11. And then we didn't go after those who attacked us, and so now we're still fighting in that area. But I think for the first time, really, we might have a strategy that might see some real successes over the next year. Hmm.
Thanks, Larry, for the call. Let's go to Jean from Nina next. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't have any international credentials or anything, but I have been reading avidly about this part of the world for years, even before we supported the Mujahideen. And I think that Afghanistan is beside the point. Afghanistan has sort of been treated as a buffer state by Pakistan. Pakistan trained most of the Taliban. Taliban means students, and they almost all of them went to madrasas in Pakistan. The ISI has been agitating in Pakistan for a long time. Pakistan itself, now, the last poll that I saw was taken actually 2 years ago, but 90% of the people of the Pakistanis supported the Taliban. They thought it was good, especially the Pashtuns. And anyway, I can't remember the people in the...
Well, Mary, I have to disagree with you about your knowledge of international affairs. You protested when you started to talk that you weren't an expert. I have to say that just about everything you said was right on the money and showed a lot of excellent perceptions about this part of the world. I think maybe the one thing that wasn't so up to date, and you alluded to that, is about 2 years old, is that recent polls in Pakistan show that the population of Pakistan kind of flirtation with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda has really dropped, and people are starting to feel the fact that their hotels and their regions have been attacked and people have been killed very personally, and the any popularity that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda had about 2 years ago has really dropped tremendously. And I think we need to take advantage of this, Mary, because you really pointed out the right things about how Pakistan's ISI in particular helped to create the Taliban. And we need to work with Pakistan, work with the ISI to go at them. And, we need to call the ISI out more and more because, quite frankly, I'm not convinced, and I don't think anybody else is who follows this area, and it seems that you aren't convinced either, that the Pakistanis aren't taking on a kind of schizophrenic approach to Afghanistan. And we've always got to remember why that is. It's because Pakistanis and their government are paranoid about India. They fought them three times. There's a great history of the partition of former India into Pakistan and India. The Indians won all those three battles. And so the Pakistanis always see everything in the world through this prism of India. And they ought to be more concerned about what really challenges their own security, which is homegrown inside Pakistan. And we need to try and persuade them that we're there to be with them to go after these people, because until those people are eliminated, as one of the other callers mentioned, you know, nobody's going to be really convinced that that region is safe for anyone.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Tom, thank you ever so much for being with us. I know you had to go out of your way to do this today, and you're just a wonderful guest. I appreciate your time and your amazing history with the country as well. Thank you.
Well, Kathleen, it's always good to be with me. I appreciate the fact that you give me a call now and again. I like to be able to talk about Afghanistan, and I appreciate the fact that your listeners are interested in this part of the world. We all have to be concerned about the rest of the world and the world in which we live today, and your program really helps all of us, I think, be more informed. That's what we all want to be, is informed.
More informed. I'm with you. Thank you. Thomas Goodyear, Dean of the International Studies and Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska, joining us by phone today from Kabul, Afghanistan. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning. We have 645 listeners who have donated to our Take Days Off campaign. If you like conversations like what you just heard and wanted to go an hour, go to WPR.org to donate now and take some days off.